I'm surprised that I managed to talk this long, knowing nothing about insurance liabilities. But I think it's now time to turn it over to our first panel and have you listen to people who actually understand what they're talking about. I think the first panel, the moderator is Mike. Am I right? Mike, Angelina?
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess we've got Steve and Jessica.
Session two.
Session one, right?
Yeah, here should be session one. Where is Angelina two? Okay, so let's see.
There we go. Right there.
Okay. Let's open that up.
Do not update. No, cancel.
Okay. Let's see.
I actually got on here. Great. All right. Now that we've got the technology working, good morning, everyone. And I'm Mike Angelina. I'm with the American Academy of Actuaries. I lead the Casualty Practice Council. And in my background, actuary by trade, focusing on the property and casualty space. I started my career in 1985, so I still consider myself a young guy. You'll hear from us. We'll talk about basically impacts of current liability reporting. And between the three of us, we're going to cover the gamut of basically what you see on a P&C insurer's balance sheet, if you will. I'll start with giving a broad overview. Then we'll get into the discussion about cycles, and you'll see some of the research that's done by the Insurance Institute as well as by Guy Carpenter and Marsh, and some really, really interesting analytics about trends that we've seen in our industry. So, let me start with why does this matter? And you know, we heard Ed talk about, you know, we spend a lot of our time focusing on the asset side of the balance sheet. Why does the liability side matter? And this is a slide. AM Best pulled this together a number of years ago, and they went back and they looked at the history of insurance company insolvencies in the P&C space. And when you look at this slide, you see 36% of the cause of the primary cause of the P&C impairment was deficient loss reserves. Liabilities matter. One out of every three companies, more than one out of every three companies, had an impairment issue because of the liabilities. The actuary in me would make the argument that if we move across a little bit more and we look at things like rapid growth, we look at catastrophic losses and maybe some reinsurance failure, these are also things that touch the liability side of the balance sheet. And a good reserving actuary or a good management team that understands the liabilities and the impacts of liabilities on their balance sheet. You know, we could do something about this, what I think makes up over 60% or two-thirds of the impairments. Okay, so why is it important? Well, let's start with the reserves remain the largest risk on the balance sheet. When you look at the P&C company's balance sheet and you look at loss reserves relative to total liabilities, the percentage is astonishing. Many companies, it's in the 90s, some it's in the 80s. And as I showed earlier, the inadequate reserves cause a lot of P&C insolvencies. What we've seen historically is that the loss reserves are subject to much historical volatility. And that may be a fair comment or an unfair comment. Not here to debate that. Just it's a fact. And a lot of this volatility comes from the casualty side. And I was a chief actuary for my company. I was a Bermuda-based company from 2005 through 2012. And you know, history, you looked at as a reserving actuary, the 18 years prior to that, a lot of the liability movement we saw came from the casualty spots. And then as a Bermuda cat reinsurer, we had Hurricanes Katrina, Rita, and Wilma in 2005, and we learned about how volatile those reserves could become. And I remember an earnings call, and I participate in our company's quarterly earnings call, and there was this discussion about, you know, why do your casualty loss reserves move so much? And we're talking about $10 million moving up or down. And we really had to do a fair amount of work educating, I'll say, the analyst community that this is a volatile business. This is the business we've chosen. Let's not kid ourselves by making this business any less volatile or smoother. It's not. When you have, when you're writing large policy limits, when you're dealing with claim frequency trends, legislative or jury verdicts, the social inflation that we saw, it's not an easy thing to smooth out. So what we really did was, let's focus on the drivers of variability. Let's dig down and find out, why do loss reserves move? Well, what benefits do we get out of this? A room full of folks that are looking at companies either through a regulatory eye or a rating agency eye or an analyst eye. When management has a better understanding of the drivers and really better understanding of their liabilities, one, it gives rise to better uses of capital and capital adequacy, solvency, capital deployment. So if a company has a better understanding of how much risk is out there, I mean, we heard Ed talk about the risks earlier. We've identified a number of risks. A lot of these are on the liability side. When you write a piece of casualty business and you realize that there will be loss reserves lasting for 20, 50 years after that and understand the risk associated with that, typically an organization would make a better capital allocation decision. Understanding the risk and reward trade-offs between certain lines of business is another reason for the organization to have a better understanding of their liabilities. And I think one of the main things, as either as a regulator or as a rating agency or as anyone talking to management, you really get a better discussion about the management culture. When management, the entire management team, understands the liabilities, understands their balance sheet, what you find is typically companies like that, they have a good culture. And the question to ask is the organization booking, you know, a point estimate or a range? And, you know, if the reserving actuary is giving you a range, the question I'd like to ask is, well, where do you book relative to that range? If you're always booking on the low side of the range, well, that's probably giving you a signal that, you know, we're optimistic. We're an optimistic organization. Companies always booking on the high side, probably telling you they're a more conservative organization. So just really the signal that they give you in terms of where they're booking on the range is powerful. The fourth point here is I would look for to identify points of interest from the quarterly close process. Now, you get to go in every 3 years or you go to go in every 5 years, but find out what's happening every quarter. Are there historical movements in the casualty business, in the property business, in the specialty business? Reserves going up, reserves coming down. Are they strengthening reserves every quarter? If they're habitually strengthening reserves every quarter, it's a signal telling you something. We haven't got our arms around this block of business. Or they're continually to release reserves, they're telling you something. That, you know, we're booking a little bit on the prudent side. I don't know if I want to say conservatively, but maybe they're booking a little bit on the prudent side. I think when you have these communications and when you see organizations and their boards getting better at understanding their liabilities, it really has a better communication and it really trickles into ORSA. Then you have an engaged board. I present it to my board every quarter on enterprise risk management, on loss reserves, on pricing cycles. And what I found is we had a better dialogue. So let's talk about the volatility a little bit, and we'll get into this a little bit more. But why are they volatile? Why are reserves so volatile? Why do we have this issue? And one, it's the inability for us, not just the actuarial profession, the insurance industry, if you will, to sometimes identify these changing trends. The propensity to sue. And I spent a lot of my career doing work on the asbestos quantification of liabilities. And remember the early projections we did in the 80s for the Manville Trust. And when you looked at it, we looked at, okay, the insulators, people in the shipyards spraying insulation that was, you know, thick with asbestos, we expected them to contract a disease. Never in our wildest dreams did we expect the brake manufacturer or the someone who was painting the ship or someone who was actually in the construction field very peripherally. In the end, 82 of the 87 industries that make up the U.S. economy touched asbestos and were brought into the litigation. We were expecting the heavy users, the insulators, to be brought in, not the general contractors, not the plumbers, the painters, and just a change in the propensity to sue. You've seen changes with judicial reform. You've seen changes with medical inflation, the way medical inflation, it's affecting everything. It's affecting life insurers. It's affecting P&C insurers. Societal attitudes are also having a change. Reinsurance issues would be another one where companies are, especially on the catastrophic nature, they're blowing through their cat programs that they've expected we won't have any more development because we've got cat protection. And what we saw with Katrina, especially with flood and storm surge, basically companies going over the top. And of course, there's the always issue of dispute. One of the big causes of the cycle that we saw in the late 90s into 2001 was really misestimating where the insurance industry was in the pricing cycle. And looking at, we'll get into this in session two, primary rate change, tort cost, focus on production. What we saw, and a lot of this was in the reinsurance community more than the primary community, was just this focus on production. We were writing business at all costs and really not fully estimating where we were in the pricing cycle. And then there was this whole idea of shocks to the system, whether they were from a legislative change or asbestos and pollution losses. I think the last point on this slide would be really, what have we learned? What have we learned as an industry, as a profession in the last 25 years? And for me, when I talk to a company and I spend time with management, you know, the question I like to ask is, one, do you appreciate that history can repeat itself? You know, why are you different this time? You're a new company. Why are you going to be different than the company you used to work for that had problems? And are you thinking behind beyond some of the traditional methods and analyses? What we've seen is some of the traditional reserving methods don't work, and they overstate or understate depending upon where we are at the cycle. So what as a management team or what as an organization are you doing to really compensate for that? Are you looking at different approaches? And I'd like to leave you with this slide. This is one of my favorite slides. I use this a lot. It's a little bit dated, but it shows how much as an industry we misestimated our reserves. That if you look at the accident years 1998, 1999, and 2000, the blue bar is basically our 12-month error. So at the end of 1998, when we put up $100 of reserves as an industry, we were 50% deficient. We needed 150. And for 2000, we put up $100 of reserves. We needed $170. So really, and this is one of the more difficult lines to reserve. It's Schedule P, Reinsurance B, so it's non-proportional reinsurance. But what it showed was really in that market cycle, which is a very, very soft pricing environment for the industry, how much of this trickled into basically the insurer's balance sheets and how much we missed it. 10 years later, we realized we missed it by a lot.